Okay, so I'm hearing it's on page 339, Ephesians chapter 1. All right, here we go. Greetings. I have come to teach you that which you have become willing to learn. Blessings upon you in your learning, for you are learning who and what you are. You were chosen through your creation to be the Son of God. This you may call predestiny, because it seems to come to you through discovery on a spiritual path, but you are discovering nothing that hasn't always been true. You are only finding the truth of you. That which you discover is true of everyone, and so it is the truth of the world. It is the one truth that binds all things and makes them one. It is the one truth that rules through law and makes anything that appears not to be of this law to also be of this law. So it's kind of interesting. We're using words truth. We're using the words God. We're using the word you. You know, you are this. We're not using the word God. We're using the word truth, the word law, and the word you. But we could also be using the word God. You know, so what this is saying is everything that appears to be truth, love, God is, but so is everything that appears not to be. Right? Because that's all there is. So all there is love. And we're even talking about that which appears to be extremely unloving. You know, think of the cruelest thing you can think of in the world. That's actually love. And Ephesians is going to show us how to see that. And so if you get Ephesians, it's going to have to be a major shift. Because you're about to accept, and in fact this says you're now learning what you have become willing to learn, which means at one point we weren't ready to accept that cruel appearance there is love. We would have just said, no, that is not love. End of story. And I close my mind to that, right? And what this is saying now is actually now that there's an opening here. You're willing to see that cruel appearance is also love. And that's what Ephesians is going to teach us, is how that is true. Right? Not that it's totally condoning the cruel appearance. It actually still wants to move everything and everyone into the right mind. But it just says both that which is love, it looks like love, and that which does not look like love is love. Or is God, or is truth. And it calls it a law. And the reason it calls it a law in this case is because it's something that can't be broken. It's something that can't be other than what it is. So it would be a divine law in that way. Verses 11 to 14. Welcome into your heart the Holy Spirit, for he is the voice within you that knows your truth and knows the law by which you live. Through him, there is freedom in the law. Through him, the law is used for truth. Now, what this is not saying is that through the ego or through the wrong mind, there is definitely not freedom in the law. Because you don't understand the law and you're kind of creating your own traps with the law. So understanding of the law is very, very freeing. Remember, Jesus said the truth will set you free. If you understand the law, it's very freeing. But if you don't understand the law, you're actually, you know, your own jailer, right? Mm-hmm. Verses 15 to 23. I have come to teach you the law by which you live, that you may use the law for your benefit. The law is the law of love. Though it may seem to be used outside of love, it cannot be. That is the veil of illusion. The law of love is used for love and by love without exception. And so the law gives as it is asked. But the law of love may be used in ignorance, without knowledge of love, so that what is given may be misunderstood because it is not remembered that the law gives as it has asked. The law of love is not separate from you, and it does not rule over you. The law of love is you, and it works through you, so that you may never be separate from the love that you are. So quite interesting, because most laws are laws that we, you know, have to obey. If we don't, we can get in trouble, right? We have to obey the law. So you could perceive yourself as under the law. But this is saying you're not under this law. You are this law. this is what you really are. This is your beingness. This is your existence, right? You're not under it. You are it, and it works through you. And what we have to learn is how this law works through us all of the time. And then when we understand how the law works through us all the time, we also kind of begin to understand how we have become our own jailer. And if we see that very, very clearly, we can begin to make different choices so that we set ourselves free using the same law. The law that jails is the exact same law that frees. It's just a matter of understanding the law. So, Ephesians chapter 2. Your mind is of God. This we have already established. Being of God, it is the same as God. This is the law of which we speak. The law of God is the law of mind. This can also be called the law of thought. And being the law of freedom, it is the law of love. It is the law through which you live. Therefore, remember that this law is who you are, so that this law works through you, even as you believe you are who you are not. This law is your truth, completely inseparable from you. You must learn this law and love it in order to realize and accept the truth of who you are. So, we can be completely, completely ignorant of the law, and most people are, you know. Yeah. You can know not a thing about it, and yet you're living fully within it because you are it. It's happening all of the time. Every moment is created through this law. Every moment that we all live through is created through this law. And it's created through the law whether you are on a spiritual path, not on a spiritual path, has some awareness of this, have no awareness of this. And there's no way that you can live and not be a part of this process. Just the fact that you live automatically links you into the process, right?
It's you know, like you talked about ignorance, and you go around extending invitations all day long.
Yes.
Invitations are going out all the time. You're just constantly sending out invitations for, and that's the law, you know.
That's the law.
It's just amazing that to become conscious of that is freedom. It really is. And even as you continue to do it,
right,
at least you know it's not some crazed lunatic god that's Let me
give you guys a silly, silly example. When I was a little girl, of course I knew nothing about this, but I was still the law, right? When I was a little girl, I loved dogs. And I used to have this fantasy that I expressed with passion in my heart a number of times. I want to be the queen of the dogs. I want all the dogs to love me. I want all the dogs to follow me around. And this was my fantasy, and I expressed this. Well, a few years ago when I was in North Carolina, where I lived anyway, most of the people do not keep their dogs chained up. They do not keep their dogs in pens. The dogs are friendly. They're not a problem, at least in my neighborhood, but all the dogs are running around. Nobody else in the neighborhood walked their dogs because the dogs go running around, but I walked Jamie every day. So when I started walking Jamie, all the other dogs got excited and they would join us. I'm walking around the neighborhood with like 20 dogs every day. And one day I was just feeling a little bit tired of it. Like, I'm so tired. Why do all these dogs go with us everywhere we go? And then that memory came back. I want to be the queen of the dogs. And then I'll look. I asked for it and here it is. You know, I'm the queen of the dogs. And so then I just laughed and walked my 20 dogs every day. But you know, Pueblo, I had never, ever, ever heard of Pueblo. And I had a dream that told me to go to Pueblo, and I moved here. I was here about 6 months, and then Bill Free was coming to visit. And when he came to visit, his Winnebago broke in Trinidad. And so we had to go down to Trinidad to take him to pick it up after they worked on it. And we're driving from Pueblo to Trinidad, and we get just south of Pueblo. I look, and I suddenly flash back to when I was like 28 years old, and my dad and I were on Highway 25, I'd totally forgotten this, driving to Aspen where my brother lived, and I looked around right there just south of Pueblo and said, this is where I want to live. And then I forgot about it. It's not like I walked around for the rest of my life. I mean, I didn't even pay attention to the fact that that town that near there was Pueblo. I mean, I just loved the mountains, but being in the desert near the mountains, I said, this is where I want to live. And it was in my heart.
How old were you,
about 28. And so fast forward to 49, and I have a dream that tells me to move to some place I never heard of. I don't even know it's the same place until 6 months after I live here. I'm driving down the highway, and then I remember. So, you know, those are just a couple of examples. I could go on all night, to be honest, but I won't. So anything that we express with a certain amount of passion, right, is a prayer. And in some way it gets fulfilled. Now, it doesn't necessarily manifest in the exact way. Like, let's say I hate someone and I say, I wish that person was dead. That doesn't mean that that person is going to get killed and that's because of my thought. Okay? But what that does mean is that I want to have this experience of feeling very, very separate from another person. I want to have this experience of, you know, not wanting other people in my presence. And guess what happens? More people like that can come into my awareness. More people that I just really don't like being around. So in some way, all of the thoughts that we express with passion are answered. What we can't predict is in what way. You know, like you could worry about getting cancer all of your life and never get cancer. But I guarantee you, you're going to notice every single person who does. Like it's going to be so in your awareness that in a way you can't get rid of it. In a way you do have cancer.
Yeah,
that's right.
Even worse.
That's right. So the universe is providing you the experience that you're asking for in one way or another. It may move you to Pueblo, you know, it could be a very literal manifestation, or it could be a non-literal manifestation, but it's still the same experience. That experience that you were...
Vibrational.
The vibrational, it's the same. And so that's why things that appear not to be love, like someone, you know, hating you and being mean to you appears not to be love, but in somewhere in your mind you were focused on the perception of attack, and now the perception of attack shows up for you. So it is love. You got what you were focused on. The problem was you didn't understand the law of love. You didn't understand by walking around thinking attack thoughts in your mind all day, or defense thoughts, which are really the same thing, that what you were asking for was perceptions of attack. You didn't have that understanding. So that's why when you're ignorant of the law, you create your own prison. But when you understand the law, you can free yourself, because then you start noticing your thinking. Again, if you don't get into the self-judgment, right? If you look at it with the right mind and not the wrong mind, that's the trick. You start noticing, oh, look at all these fear thoughts I'm having. Do I really want to continue to have the experience of fear? Because that's what I'm doing. I'm, in effect, praying for experiences of fear. If I don't want to have all these experiences of fear, then I need to let go of being worried about this and worried about that, and I need to start learning how to trust. You know? Same thing with attack and defense and guilt and, you know, just any of these types of things. So, going back to the reading here, does anybody have any comments or questions before I continue?
This reminds me of the thing that you always said, love giving to
Is it to love, yeah, through love, that which love?
Yeah, love is giving through Spirit, to Spirit, that which Spirit requests. That's actually not even in Ephesians. That came through a personal message on attack when I was asking about attack once. But you could say that summarizes Ephesians. That's exactly the summary of Ephesians. Love is giving through Spirit, to Spirit, that which Spirit requests. So every appearance is love. And this is where we want to purify our minds, because we're asking for all kinds of experiences. You know, even watching TV, watching the news, people can get very judgmental about the president and his medical thing, what is it, Obamacare. And they don't understand that when you're sitting there judging the president, you're asking for some type of experience of separation, yes?
I just wanted to say, you know, so many people say that, well, whenever the government gets involved in anything, it just goes to hell. And I've got, well, small wonder, we've got 300 million people passionately
judging
energizing the government with hate thoughts. You know, I mean, it's a wonder that the entire governmental system doesn't burst into flame. You
know? Well, I will someday. So far, there's not a single government that's lasted forever. Whether it will in our lifetime or not, I don't know. But my guess is if the world continues, America won't always be the top dog. Yeah. Somewhere that shift of power will occur. Yeah. You know, so... yeah.
You know, and we talk about top dog, and basically that's in a comfort level, bodily comfort level, you know, but, you know, and that's just, that to me, that there's a lot of Western ignorance there, you know. We talk about being number one and, you know,
yeah,
at top of the charts, and we're comfortable.
Yeah, we're comfortable and we're comfortable influential.
And influential.
Right? Yes, yes. All right, so let's look at verses 14 to 18. The Christ shall be the symbol for the law. For through the Christ, the ones that seemed many are one. Through this law, the ones that seem many are one. Did he just repeat that, or did I read it twice? And in fact, they have always been one, as they are bound as one through the law. So what he's saying is, I'm going to call this Christ. That's the symbol. I'm going to call it Christ, even though some of what's happening is not right-minded, right? And the reason I'm going to call it Christ is because whatever's happening, whether it's right-minded or whether it's wrong-minded, you're doing it as one. And I want to emphasize that oneness, so I'm going to use the word Christ. So some people may not like this use of the word Christ because they want to see Christ only associated with the right mind. And here Christ is also being associated with the wrong mind. But the point is to emphasize what we really are. The point is to help wake us up. Right? We're doing this together. And in fact, one thing that Dan and I were talking about when he was here last time was, you remember a year and a half ago when this boy up in... Aurora went into the theater at the Batman movie and shot up a number of people at the Batman movie. Well, we came to church here, you know, a couple days after that, and you know, there was a lot of talk about that here. And here at church, they allow us to share. After she speaks, we all share. And what I said in my sharing was, I said, well, you know, the way that I look at this is that the world is a reflection of our minds. And so when appearances like this happen, what that really means is I need to get more and more diligent at watching my mind for attack thoughts. You know, so every single time something out there happens, it's a reminder to me to become even more perfected, always trying to become more perfected. And that's without any sense of pressure. So I'm saying that with the right mind, not with the wrong mind. You could say the exact same words with the wrong mind and you might feel a pressure. But I don't feel a pressure. But I feel a heart dedication, a heart commitment. And, you know, Dan was saying that he remembers now what I said that day. But what I said that day came from my understanding of Ephesians. You know, lots of people want to blame that man, maybe, for going in and shooting. Other people want to blame mental illness, which I think is pretty dang apparent that he's, you know, crazy. But where does mental illness come from? Where does the whole appearance come from? It comes from all of us. And there's no sense in blaming. Blaming doesn't do anything. Blaming is a wrong mind. So we don't need to blame him. We don't need to blame mental illness, and we don't need to blame ourselves. But we want to be awake with the law, and we want to realize I, it's always, for each one of us, it's always I just want to keep getting better and better and better and more perfected at my mind watching. And we actually can get better and better and more perfected at our mind watching.
Yeah. And it's really like the world is a pressure cooker. And then there's one little place where it comes out.
It pops.
All the pressure is in there. It's
That's
all
right.
contained in there. But there's one little speck where it leaves, you know, and that's...
Well, and this is where Hitler and Jesus are exactly the same. Lots of people can't have trouble understanding how Hitler and Jesus can be the same. But you know what they're the same? They're both pops. One is a pop of our wrong mind. The other one is a pop of our right mind. Right? They're both pops of what's going on with all of us. You know, so a lot of people think that Jesus somehow awoke individually. How can someone awake individually when there's no such thing as an individual? It doesn't happen that way. They're both pops. One popped the wrong mind, Hitler. One popped our right mind, Jesus. They're exactly the same. And in fact, as we go further in Ephesians, basically what Ephesians is going to do is kind of say, so which side do you want to be on in this popping process? Do you want to be on the side of the wrong mind and those pops? Or do you want to come over and join the right mind and start spending more of your time focusing on right-minded stuff and help with those pops? Right? Which side do you want to be in this process? Okay. So we're going to call this the Christ. So verses 19 to 22. It is true that the Christ is the chief cornerstone on which the foundation and the building are built. This is why all is one. It is because it is through no other process that which is built can be built. Call it an agreement, but it's not an agreement. He's just saying, if you know, this will help you to understand, we'll look at it this way, but this is not the truth. Call it an agreement, but it is not an agreement. It is the law of the nature of truth. But from your perspective, it seems like an agreement that is bound through the law of love. This is the agreement, which is also the law. All that you are through creation. All that you be through creation also. In this way, thought is alive and serves as your creative force through your brothers who serve you as you serve them. So let me stop with that part right there. I'll tell you what, as the scribe, I understood. I understood the words in this context, are and be had different meanings. Are referred to our reality. Be referred to our appearance or our personality. So, for example, the Regina personality, whatever it is, for better or worse, you know, its warts and its highlights, are actually made by all of us. All of our thoughts, all of our, you know, passionate wishes came together to make Regina, the character. Came together to make Francine the character, Tom the character, Dave the character, Priscilla the character. You know, I used to have Debbie, who lived with me, who I'm sure you guys know because I've talked about her enough times, who was a professional thief. And when she was living with me, sometimes she would really feel a lot of guilt for some of the stealing she had done. She felt like she really hurt people by stealing things that were very, very precious to them. And I used to say, you know, Debbie, all you did was a really good job of being the thief. You know, who made the role the thief? We all did. We make the thief, and we make the police officer, and we make the victims. The whole appearance comes from all of us. So often what happens is, as with the belief that I'm a person, I begin to feel personally responsible for this personality. And so if this personality happens to be a little direct and hurts people sometimes because she's a little too direct, then I get down on myself for being so direct. But what this is saying is that directness It's using the word creation, because it doesn't do make and create like the Course does, right? That directness was a creation of all of us. That entire, you know, we're the writers of the play. And then the play is what we wrote. So every single personality, flaws and highlights, is perfect in that it's the reflection of what all of our thoughts are asking for as a part of this experience. And this is where, in fact, someone has asked me to repost the teaching of the flow, and I will do it, if you're listening to this recording, as soon as I can. Right now I'm caught up in doing tax letters and things that have to be done before the end of January, and I have to go back and find, you know, the old recordings. But I will repost the flow. And this is what the flow talks about. The teaching of the flow came to me when I was feeling extremely, extremely unworthy and judging lots and lots of things about this personality that I live with, right, as me. And that's what the flow said. It said when you judge yourself, you're also judging your brothers, because they're who made you, right? And that worked for this personality, because this personality didn't want to judge your brothers. So that reasoning helped me to start letting go of self-judgment. Because if I, through judging me, I'm also judging you. You can't judge the creation without judging the creator, which is all of us. And so that logic helped me to let go of self-judgment. But that's true for everyone. So you think that you are personally responsible for whatever your personality flaws are. That's just hogwash. That's just hogwash. And the sooner that you start to see the personality as nothing but a character, literally a character, because that's what it is, the sooner you'll be able to accept it. And then the funny thing is, the sooner you accept it, the sooner some of those warts actually go away. Some of them will stay, what you were perceiving as warts. You know, like I've told Danielle, Danielle is a silly, silly character, right? You agree with that? A silly, silly character. And she used to really judge her silliness. I don't think she does anymore. But she used to really self-judge how she's different from other people. The way she sees things, the way she thinks is different than other people, and she judged that. But she makes everybody laugh with her perceptions. And I told her, I said, you know, Danielle, you could become enlightened. And those silly aspects, those quirky aspects of your personality remain. Because, you know, that's just a part of the character. So some of the personality, which is really caught up in believing the ego, will soften or disappear. But some of the personality, even some of which you judge right now, will stay. As long as, you know, like Adyashanti says, God likes to ride bicycles through me. That's a part of that personality, right? With Bentino, he likes to go climbing those rocks. If you watch him on Facebook, he's always posting pictures of him out there climbing the rocks. You know, so.
And it gives you the opportunity, once you have that transcendence, to appreciate what we call differences.
Yes.
Appreciate all the
and love them.
That are available.
And just like you appreciate the differences of food in a buffet.
Yeah, right.
You know? We don't want all the food to taste the same, right? So the personalities are characters created by the whole. You are not solely responsible for the personality that you most directly experience. Right?
Just a quick question. If it's
sure.
And we won't go there. But what about soul? We're all responsible for our own. And the only reason I'm talking about this is because I've been reading the Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
It speaks about soul.
Yes.
The soul as a, which we are, again, in dualistic terms, it's hard to say it, but we're solely responsible for our own soul.
Like, this is like the Course would say, the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. And, you know, the this is where I think the very first vision I ever had comes in. This is the vision of the polka dots. This is when before I even consciously was on the spiritual path, but I was walking into work one day, and I had asked in my mind, because I had read Peace Pilgrim, and Peace Pilgrim said, we're all one, and I'd never even heard that idea before. That, like, that was new to me and completely opposite of my experience. Right? You know, to me, we were obviously separate. It was the clearest thing, you know, that I could see. And she's like saying we're all one, and I didn't understand that at all, but something in me trusted her. So I kind of asked in my mind, not realizing I was saying a prayer, I asked my mind, how could it be that we're all one? So after this, I was walking into work one day and I had this vision. And the vision was of this infinite light, completely infinite light. But on a portion of the light, there were a bunch of black polka dots. And the black polka dots overlapped with each other. So that where the black polka dots were, the light didn't shine through. So it was blocked by these black polka dots. Now, I understood that each black polka dot represented an apparent individual. So each of us was a polka dot. And so it was the belief in the individual that blocked the light, right? But there were some places in that pile of polka dots where some people were starting to let go of the belief that they were that individual, and the polka dot was beginning to fade. And as the polka dot began to fade, the light from behind it began to stream through. And then there were a few spots where the belief in the individual had been completely let go, and there was no polka dot anymore, there was only light. And what I understood was, we're one in the light. That's our reality. We're one in the light, you know, in the oneness. So, would you say that made me say that?
Well, I was
remember?
Talking about soul.
Oh, so go on with what your question. Say your question again, then.
We were talking about personality and that.
Okay.
All
got it. So, somehow that black polka dot then is also coming from the light. It has to, right? And so somehow the light, from the perspective of the belief in the individual, has to let go of that perspective of that belief and realize again that it's the light. And you can only do that from your individual perspective. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So as each one of us is accepting the atonement for ourselves, or each one of us is, you know, letting go of the belief that we're the individual, right? What we return to is the realization of who we all are, which is what we share. But it has to be done from those individual seeing pockets that we somehow created. But also at the same time, what we're told is, as I let go of the belief I'm the individual and I awaken, that still sparks something in all the other polka dots. So it's not a disassociated
right.
event, right?
Yeah.
It's an associated event.
Yeah.
So it's both individual and not. Does that answer your soul question?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Okay, so starting at sentence 8 again, this is the agreement, the false agreement. All that you are through creation. All that you be, this is talking about like the personality, you be through creation also. In this way, thought is alive and serves as your creative force through your brothers who serve you as you serve them. So, again, not only does all of the thoughts of everyone make me, but all of my thoughts go into making you. Right? I mean, it's completely related. So, when you're being whoever you are, is the personality, whoever you be, when you're being whoever you be, I can't get mad at you for being that, not if I'm being conscious of the law, because I was a part of the author that made your character. So I might as well enjoy your character, whatever character idiosyncrasies you have. And it's almost like if, you know, I happened to see Saving Mr. Banks last week. And that's a story about the woman who was the author of Mary Poppins. And Disney wanted to buy the rights to it and make it into a movie. And she had a really hard time giving up the characters, because, you know, whenever you give up the rights, they always, you know, the movie always changes it a little bit. And she just couldn't quite give up the characters. But if you think about it, she created these characters, both the good characters and the bad characters, and she loved them all. You know, she loved those characters. She loved, you know, the mother who was non-attentive in the story. You know, she loved every single one of those characters. But we can love all of our characters too, if we see that they're characters. You know, if you start seeing that what's happening is we're watching a film and we all have a front row seat, but that front row seat is the appearance of a body. And in fact, this is a 4D film, not 3D, because you also feel the emotions, right? So it's a 4D film, but it's still a film. And if you can learn to sit back and watch it, you can really start to learn to enjoy personality idiosyncrasies that once you would have seen as flaws, once you would have thought were annoying, both in yourself and others. Because you can start to just love the characters as characters. Just like that lady loved all of her characters in Mary Poppins. Because you're the author. But not you alone. This is where some people get a little messed up with this kind of teaching. They start thinking, I'm the author. No. That's level confusion. So I like to say, from our perspective, we're the author. Right? Because it is something that's done at a level that's not at the individual level. So once again, all that you are through creation. All that you be through creation also. In this way, thought is alive and serves as your creative force through your brothers who serve you as you serve them. This is not a conscious agreement, so it can seem to bring unhappiness and conflict. But all that is at the surface is illusion. In truth, you ask of your brother through your mind, and your brother answers you exactly as you have asked. This, yeah, that's the invitation he's talking about. Yeah. This is the law of creation, which is used but is not understood. I have come to teach you what you do, that you may choose to do what you do for the love and benefit of all. This is a step toward acknowledging your truth. Welcome the willingness to honestly practice this step in consciousness with me. So he's saying that, you know, most of our existence, we've been participating in this law. Again, we are this law without conscious awareness. So when I'm sitting here thinking how much I don't like Francine, and then Francine shows up one day and starts telling me what an annoying biddy I am, I didn't deserve that, you know? I mean, where's she getting it? And I don't realize, heck, I asked for it, right? Because it's not, she's just giving me what I asked for, right? She's it's pure love, but she doesn't know it's pure love either. She thinks she hates my guts, right? So we have this unconscious agreement as a symbol, and we're serving each other. I'm giving her what she's asking for. She's giving me what I'm asking for, and we hate each other. And in fact, one thing that has happened to my perception is when I see two people that appear to hate each other, I actually do see that as love now. I mean, I see, wow, those people are really involved with one another. You know? Right. That's how I see it.
That passion.
That it is passion. Yeah, they're really involved with one. And they think they hate each other. They're best of friends. And that's an honest perception that I have, not just some intellectual thing I make up. It's how I see. But that's how it is. That's how it is. Again,
when you see that, also, the Course talks about forgiveness, but this really makes it so much easier to forgive.
Yeah.
You know,
it did me.
Yeah, it just makes it so much easier to just, I forget a lot still, but it just makes it so much easier to just say, oh my goodness.
And ourselves. For those of us that judge ourselves so much,
That's right. It's just a character that we all made. And what would a show like this be without a lot of different kinds of characters? You need lots of characters in the show. Yeah.
And too, whenever you're in a movie and you see all these characters, there's always something in each of the characters that you identify with anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Every single one.
Yeah.
So again, one other thing I wanted to point out is sentence 15. It says, I have come to teach you what you do, that you may choose to do what you do for the love and benefit of all. So as we get more and more aware of what we're passionately thinking about, that's actually like a prayer, or a request that the universe is going to in some way answer, and we start to really see that without judgment, with the right mind, we start then consciously choosing to passionately think differently. You know, we would much rather contemplate something than sit around and think grievance thoughts. Because that's what we want to give. You're giving through your thinking is what you're doing. You're giving a gift. So the question is, what kind of gift do you want to give? The gift of the experience of separation or the true gift of love? You know, the gift of inspiration, the gift of lightheartedness. So that's it for today, chapters 1 and 2. We'll begin Ephesians chapter 3 next week. But as far as an assignment goes, I'll give you an assignment that Holy Spirit gave me once. Holy Spirit asked me for 3 days to keep a very small notebook with me. You knew that was going to be, because it's the perfect assignment for this, isn't it, Dave? To keep a very, so if you guys could find some way to, maybe even if you have to go to the store to CVS and buy one of those little bitty spiral notebooks, but something that I could literally keep with me, like for me in my purse, for guys that would need to fit in a pocket maybe. And whenever I caught myself kind of unconsciously daydreaming or thinking, just write down what it was. So if I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, I just hate having to go out and do this yard work, and you know why, every time you do the yard work, something happens, you gotta do the yard, write down, oh, I was thinking complaining thoughts about yard work. Just write down what it was. Do that for 3 days. Okay? 3 days of writing down what you catch yourself thinking about. Do you need a pen?
Yeah, I was looking for one.
Okay, I have one in my purse. Let me get it for you. Because this is important, I think. I mean, you know, it can be quite enlightening, so that's why I say it's important.
It's funny because I always wanted to do that, and I never did.
So. There you go. There's a pen.
You're being forced.
Yeah.
Now I'm being forced, exactly.
You're getting what you're prayed for.
That's right. So for 3 days, again, don't do anything else with it. Just write down, you know, something to remind yourself of what the story was, what was going on. After you do that for 3 days, then, you know, on the fourth day, sit down with it and look at each story and kind of categorize what kind of a story was that. And I'll give you examples of categories. Was this guilt, either self-guilt or projected guilt? Was this a guilt story? You know, was I blaming someone for something or blaming myself for something? Was this a fearful story? Was I worrying about someone or something? Was this an attack story? Was I attacking someone in my mind? A defense story? What are some other examples of categories that we might run into?
Resistance.
Okay, could a resistance story, an unworthiness story. Try to kind of look at it and with one word categorize it. And try to categorize each of your stories. You know, kind of sit down at one time and do this. And then look and see what you were really thinking about and asking for over the last 3 days. How much was your mind on blame, for example? On attack, on defense, self-judgment? And when you look at what you were thinking about for 3 days, you might begin to have some insight into why your experiences are as they are. Are there any questions about the assignment? Okay, then what I'm going to do is stop the recorder and we'll have a few moments of silence.